Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
The following audio is via a Skype call.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show, talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail. Hey, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. We've got a great show for you today. Everybody out there. Muddy roads. Yeah, we're going to talk about that. Muddy roads, blue skies. Vel is joining me here today. I'm going to tell you a little bit about who she is, what she's up to, and why this book really has become more than just a book you read. It really touches upon and talks about what does it mean to really pick oneself up? You know, what do you do when you look at your life and you think about starting over? Or you think maybe about the fact that you might not be able to. But how do you do that? What is it we're going to talk about today that says not only is this a journey, but it's a journey that enables us to grow along the way, to become so absolutely understanding about yourself, who you are. But more importantly, it talks to what we learn from the choices we make in life, what we stand for in life, and how this book, how we enact, as it says here, my journey to the Foreign Service from rural South to Tanzania and beyond. What is it like when you say yes to that 26-year career track? And when you look at your life from beginnings to the long the way journey, to the obstacles, to the racism, the sexism, the insubordination, all of that, what is it that we learn about our character? And why is it sometimes that we wait for us to be so far down the barrel, the bottom, to say, God, can you help me here? Today, you're going to get an inside perspective about an unforgettable journey from rock bottom to the top of the world. And for those of you that are thinking it can't be done, it can be done. It has been done. And this is what today is all about. Muddy roads, blue skies, and much, much, much more. Vel, it's great to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Pat.
You know, I got to start from this question that I ask a lot of people. And I've been doing this for 15 years. And, you know, I know what it's like to start in the beginning, like start a career at the bottom, like being called a clerk for 10 years, right? You know, you don't really understand what that means. But I want to ask you this question. I just barely scratched the surface talking about you a little bit. But what is it? What are some of the obstacles? What are some of the challenges as you look back now? What did you have to overcome to bring you to this very moment?
Oh, my goodness. So many things. Thanks for the question. I've been talking all day. But first, I had to overcome the fact, the stigma of being from a small, you know, Black community in the rural South. Mm-hmm. And with me hearing in church and other events that, you know, it's hard to make it out. It's hard. I've heard all the negative things. So I had to get past that. That was a hurdle. And thank goodness I had people who visited us who had traveled abroad. And it created that sense of wanderlust, that dreaming, that dreaming me to get out and see the world. So I got past that. Then, I mean, my parents were supportive for sure. But after that, then, you know, high school, my parents were very, very strict on us. So I never went to a football game until I was out of high school. You know, we didn't do anything. You know, so, you know, being sheltered, I had to get past being sheltered. So when I went to college, like, everything was, like, so new. I mean, really brand new. I didn't know how to act at a football game. You know, I was just like, lost. And to me, that was a challenge because I had to act like I'm, you know, a sophisticated young lady in college out to conquer the world. So that was a challenge. And then I moved down into the real world, real world challenges. The first thing was the marriage, my first marriage. It was, you know, my family instilled a sense of family, you know, in us where, you know, you should, you know, get married, have a child. And so that's what I thought. I did it. But I wasn't listening closely. I did not hear how to cope in that marriage, how to withstand the abuse, you know, how to just make it work. And it was challenging because I wanted to make the marriage work because that's the proper thing to do, you know, according to how I was raised. But I just couldn't do it because, to be honest, he would have killed me or I would have killed him. It was that bad. And what made it worse is I was out in California and I was in Georgia. I traveled to California once I graduated. My brother was in the military out there. So he said, I'm going to give you a new beginning. So my brother left, you know, just right after I got married. So I had to endure that on my own. No family, no friends or anything. But, you know, I can't remember my dream and what my brother told me when he left. He said, sis, you're on your own. He said, fight if you have to. And he didn't say what kind of fighting, you know. He just said, fight if you have to. And that's what I did. I fought physically. I fought mentally. I did it. But I overcame, and I found a way out of that marriage alive. Coincidentally, he and I are friends today because we have a child. You know, and then moving on into the career world, I started out working in the South after leaving California. And it was, I mean, that's when I first got my touch of, you know, racism. You know, we were at this military base where, well, it was a military base, but it was a submarine base where people came from all over the world to work there, not the world, the country. And we had this one lady from this state who really did not care for people of color, you know, especially mingling with each other. And she was always out to get me. She was looking for, you know, she couldn't get me professionally and duty-wise because I knew my job. So, you know, she used to tell me, you know, you stay away from those folks, you know. And I'm like, what are those folks, you know? And she would point. It'd be like a group of white people. Like, what's going on? I couldn't comprehend it. Like, you know, I just left California where things are great. And so, you know, I had to just absorb that. Like, okay, this is not going to be out here. I have to learn how to get over this. So I just smiled, kept my mouth shut. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Until she found me being consoled once by someone who was white because I was going through my second marriage. It was horrible. And she decided she was going to fire me. And I'm like, you know what? Fine. But I'm going to have to come to grips with this is how the world is out here, that we're going to have bigotry. Yeah. And I have to just be careful. And, you know, I mean, I've had a couple of incidents, you know, more incidents like that. But then when I got into the Foreign Service, I expected a different caliber of people.
Yeah.
But not quite. It wasn't as blatant, but it's there. And then I finally said, you know, people bring with them how they were raised and what they believe in, their family believe in. You know, I have my biases, and I brought them with me. So I did not look at these people when they inflicted things on me as, oh, they're being malicious, or, you know, they hate me. It's like, that's just what they've been taught. And thank goodness that I didn't like the way I was taught when it came to stuff like that. So where it was still there, I did not project that on people.
Yeah.
So I looked at them as, you know, being helpless, you know, clueless as to what they were doing to me and others. You know, when they said things like, oh, you know, women don't know anything. What do they know about technology? Of course, I was in the technology field.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of men, you know, and white men and military, ex-military men. So, like, you know, and I'm like, I'm the smartest person in here, you know, and like, I'll forget it. And they would literally skip me, you know, or,
yeah.
you know, they would sit, I would be like in a country of color, you know, like in Africa somewhere. And to hear someone high up say something like, well, what do you expect from these types of people? You know, I was like, oh, my God, you know. And they were talking about the cult, you know, the people, you know, the culture. I'm like, oh, my goodness.
I know, the people.
I felt bad. You know, it's like, oh, my goodness. But I kept my mouth shut until I got my voice in a position where I could speak.
Yeah.
And make a difference.
And, you know, Vella, that's what I love about, first of all, that's what I love about your story. But I also love it about your book, because there's something about being influenced by a mother and a grandma, or, you know, as far back from the South. There's something I learned from, you know, having a stepmother that was from the deep South, you know, and I'm talking about like a woman that had her first child at 12 and her second child at 13, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And there's something you learn from women like that. You know, there's something that you learn. And one of the things that I loved about it when your book came across my desk and I'm starting to read it, I could hear her. I could hear my mom's voice through your voice and so many things that you said. And I want to ask you about it, because jumping out at me was some of the same energy vibration that you have, that she had, that she taught us girls, right? I don't know what she did with my brother, but I can't worry about my brother. But the girls, she taught us. And she would say something like, you know, girls, I'm just going to tell you now, honey, what don't kill you is going to make you stronger. And now we have a word for it. It's called perseverance. I want to ask you, many, many things you wrote about this, you know, being Vella Jean Scott, you know, from Homestown, right? A community. Mm-hmm. Perseverance could be your middle name. I believe it could, if it is your middle name. What was it about perseverance that helped build for you the strength and the character and the resilience that one needs to be successful despite all the stuff we're talking about?
Well, I felt that if I wanted it bad enough, I would stick with it. My mother taught us not to be a quitter. Persevere. If it's something that you want, you go for it. And if you're getting knocked down, stand up and go in a different direction. Swerve a bit, but keep that goal in mind. And that, because she told us stories like that, you know, and those little helpful hints, when I was out there and was being knocked down, and there were many times I wanted to say, that's it. That's it. Oh, I said that's it. And then quickly I'm like, oh, no. Uh-huh. I'm getting back up. I'm going to be resilient, you know. I'm going to be a risk taker. I'm going to do this again. Like, for instance, my marriage, you know, two failed marriages, you know, knocked me down. I'm like, no, I'm going to persevere, because I do want to get married. Marriage is something very sacred to our family, and I'm going to do it. And I persevered. What happened? I found a great husband of almost 20 years. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just not wanting to quit. You know, that's kind of it.
You know, as I'm reading through here, and let me just tell you one of the things I pulled out, and I want you to talk about this. You talk about resilience. The cornerstone to resilience is the love, trust, and encouragement shown by family. And, you know, when I was reading this and getting ready for the show, I was really struck by the fact that your family really did want you to write this book. I think it was your son, right?
Yes.
Wanted you to write this book. I want to talk about why it's important for us to create this knowledge trail, this transfer to the world, especially to generations to come, because we're going to talk about what you learned along the way. But why was this important to your son for you to do this?
It was important to him because he said, I remember one day he said, Mom, he said, you need to write about this, all the things that, you know, we're going through. And I said, why? He said, because years from now, people will not remember you nor me. And my children, because I have just one son, he said, my children will not know their strength. They will not know that they had a grandmother who was strong, who was a diplomat, who was knocked down and got back up. And he said, if you can just do it for my children, for your grandchildren, Mom, I'll be all right. You know, and I just found that, like, you know, like, chilling. It's like, really? And he said, yeah. He said, do it. And that's why I did it. But it's mostly for that legacy. You know, when I think about, as I was writing, and you know, I thought about my only granddaughter, Savannah, and I'm like, you know, she's pretty strong-willed like I am, and, you know, she's only five, but she's ready to take on the world. And I'm like, I need to tell the story so she would not go out there like me and get knocked down. Because, you know, the mentality of our kids, you know, change, you know, generation to generation. And I'm like, I need her to know some core values, you know, so she can get back up and get back up stronger and move on. So it's a teaching. It's a teaching manuscript, a legacy for her as well as my grandsons and generations to come.
You know, you have been, now fast forward, kind of looking back, fast forward and looking back, like that's an interesting sentence right there. we're looking at, look, you served with honor, 13 foreign countries, several assignments in Washington, all of the above. But you also experience, almost as if it were taken from a Hollywood screen, right? You also experience the terror that exists in the world. And I'm referring to, you know, what happened in Tanzania, what happened after the bombing. Because I was really struck by not only your stamina, your resilience, but your unwavering commitment to moving forward in life. And as I was reading this, I'm telling you, you and my mom, you two could be twins or something. As I'm reading this, I'm also reading so much about how that character has been built into us girls, right, that grew up with a mom like that. But let me ask you, what is it about being able to pick oneself up, as you say in the book? Look, I remember being on the floor and I remember picking myself up and dusting myself off. What is it about that sense of you that is so embedded in the resilience to be a woman of color in the world today? What is it about that we need to share with our generations?
Well, because it indicates that we're not failures, and we're not going to allow ourselves to be a failure. So, I mean, literally, I got up, and it was dust on me, and I dust myself off. And I thought, I'm like, oh, goodness, this is what we're supposed to do. We're not supposed to be like people think we are. Oh, you know, helpless females, when something happens, we, you know, throw our hands up and start running, you know, screaming, oh, help me, male figure. No. I after I literally dust myself off, then I shook off what happened and continued. Even though I didn't know what had happened, I continued to do what I needed to do there in the embassy that day, which was pretty scary. And I would not advise anyone to continue to do what I did in the aftermath of it, because it was almost suicidal. But I had a job to do, and I was not going to be a failure, because I didn't want to go back home a failure. Especially with my career. I went back home several times for the marriage. So I said, you know, I just in a quick second, like, I was trained. I know what to do. I'm going to do it. I, in the midst of all the sirens and stuff going on, I need to do A, B, C, D. And I did it because if I don't do, if there was A, B, C, D, and I did not do C, I was going to be in trouble no matter what. Because they needed, I was, well, I wouldn't say a scapegoat, but if something went wrong, it was going to be me. Because communication is critical in a crisis. So I stood around in that place I was, where I worked, and I did everything I could think of I need to do from the training and beyond to ensure I did not fail. Because I knew that I was going to be looked at because I was a female. How does she handle herself? Does she do everything correct? So obviously I did because I got that heroism award.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you did. Yeah. And, you know, I was one of the things that for those of you just tuning in, Muddy Roads, Blue Skies, we're going to talk more about this. But, Bella, let's take a moment because I want folks to know a couple things. One, how do they get a copy of the book? Let's start talking about that. And Benny, we're going to be giving away a copy. But also, I would really love for people to be able to find out more about you. Can you please let folks know the website, social media, how they can kind of keep track of what you're doing?
Absolutely. Well, I do have a website. It's Vela, well, HTTPS, / Vela Mbina. That's V-E-L-L-A, M. Be like boy, ENNA
.com. Yeah. So just so you guys, everybody knows, it's Vela and it's the letter M, BENNA, right? .com.
Yes.
Because once they go to your website, they're going to be able to get a copy of the book. They're going to be able to look at, you know, a little bit about your story, hiring you for speaking events, women's groups, you name it, all of that, churches, everything out there, right?
But yeah, they can link to my social media sites.
Yes, I know. I know. I did that. Okay. I had to dig into this a little bit more. There's so many key things you outline in this book. So if I look at the book, besides all the fabulous, I mean, reading about your journey is just incredible to me. I love it. I love the way you wrote the book. But there are individual nuggets in here that I think a lot of us struggle with. One of them is identity. One of them is identity. Mm-hmm. And man, when I got here, I mean, this could be a whole separate book. Identity. When I embrace who I am, I rise. I read that and I thought, man, that one little sentence you wrote sounds so simple. But I got to tell you, for somebody like me, I'm still working on it. Right. But it's important. To do it. And, you know, like everybody sees us out in the world now and they think, oh, well, that's you, Pat. You're like Dr. Pat and you're out there and like, okay, there's Vela and she's out there. But man, it took me decades before I even spoke up at a corporate meeting because I had a corporate career. What is it about that part of who we are that helps us become who we were meant to be?
About rising, I mean, I don't follow your question. Can you say it again? I'm sorry,
yeah,
Dr. Paul.
Yeah, about rising, but the journey of stepping into our full power doesn't mean that we popped out like this out there talking about like what we're talking about. I mean, it took me a really long time before I spoke up in the corporate world or I spoke up in life.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I'm coming from the South and from a, you know, underprivileged family. And I mean, it was just, and being a female, a black female Southerner, I had so many strikes against me. And then I entered, it wasn't corporate America, but I entered the elite of the government workers, which is the U.S. diplomats, the foreign service, which were, you know, mostly white men, regardless of the field. And I'm like, oh my goodness, how am I going to compete? How am I going to speak as elaborate as they speak and, you know, and the knowledge? And, you know, I didn't go to Yale. I went to Georgia Southern University. You know, what am I? And I'm like, oh, my goodness, I don't fit here. There were some doubts at times, like, I don't fit here. I would sit around, you know, the conference table at our country team and, you know, I'd be the only black, the only female. Like, oh, no. And I was afraid to speak because I'm from the South. I didn't, you know, I have a Southern drawl. It was worse, you know. And sometimes, you know, mine's not, you know, who be ain't, you know. And that's just, I mean, that's just me, you know. But I was embarrassed. I was ashamed of it. I'm like, oh my goodness, how am I going to do this? And I had ideas, Dr. Pat, things that I would not say. I was afraid to say. And you know what? The person next to me said it, exactly what I wanted to say. They got the glory. But after a couple of years of seeing people behind me, my peers rise, and they rose because of ideas that I could not speak about in the boardroom because I was too ashamed. I tried to be someone else. I tried to be white. I tried to speak white, but I was afraid that it wasn't going to come out right. I tried to be this, tried to be that. And finally, I'm like, you know what? I mean, actually, what made me, to be honest, what made me realize, you know, that I should just be me, is I was, we were in a meeting, and it was an Asian person there, and very bright man, and he just started speaking, and it wasn't perfect English. It wasn't a Queen's English, but everyone was like, oh, yeah, that's a good idea, you know? And I'm like, well, why don't I speak up, you know?
Yeah.
I don't speak the Queen's English. And I spoke up that day, and folks looked around like, good idea, Bella. Keep it coming. You know, and from that day on, I'm like, I don't care how it comes out. I'll perfect it later. But right now, I'm going to speak because I am a part. If they invited me to this meeting, I'm a part of it. I'm an expert. So I need to share what I have to the group.
Mm-hmm. And that's and you know, when that light bulb goes on right there, fasten your seatbelt, everybody. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about faith. You know, what is it that when all else is said and done, what is it about our lives that literally catapults us from the inside to a place that can become unrecognizable? That thing we call faith, what is it about that that transcends the magnitude of obstacles that we can count on our daily cheat sheet of things that have gotten in the way for us? What is it about faith that does something for us that nothing else can do? Let's take a short break. We'll be right back. Tune in to The Astral Insider, your portal for adventure, insight, and growth with Fernando Albert, and get ready to tour the astral realm, expand your life in ways you've never imagined, and call in for the journey of your life with this world-renowned lucid dreamer, astral projectionist, psychic medium, and healer, Fernando Albert. This is every second and fourth Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Hi, I'm Jane Matanga with Grow Your Soul Radio. It's been said that whatever you believe, you are. When you take charge with your positive thoughts and beliefs, you are the creator of your perceptions. You have the power to shift your reality. When you begin to shift your beliefs, the universe will dream a bigger dream for you than you ever imagined. Believe in your dreams, and every part of your world can open up in new and glorious ways, because everything is possible. I'd love for you to join me on Grow Your Soul Radio. with my co-host, Dr. Pat, on Transformation Talk Radio.
Tune in to The Jen Royster Show, intuitive guidance to inspire your life, each Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This amazing show is an inspirational hour that will take you on an epic metaphysical journey to discover the spiritual approach to life's greatest challenges. Dr. Jen is an internationally known intuitive counselor, spiritual teacher, and energy healer. Call in for intuitive readings and visit JenRoyster.com for more information.
Are you feeling stuck in unhealthy habits, toxic relationships, or low self-esteem? Do you crave a healthy relationship filled with inspiration? You might just be on the verge of attracting your soulmate. Tune in each month to The Laura Richer Show, where dating coach Laura Richer and co-host matchmaker Peggy Bennett share tools for using your dating breakdown for a relationship breakthrough. For more information, visit richerhealinghypnosis.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. Welcome back. I'm Dr. Pat. For more information about me, go to drpatshow.com and transformationtalkradio.com. For more information about my guests, we're going to make sure you have Ella's website. I'd love to give a copy of this book away. And the reason that I think this is such an important book, first of all, what I was saying to Ella during a break was that I love the way she wrote the book. I mean, the book is written, you know, with some very, very personal stories, experiences, but emotionally, you feel like you're there with her. You know, you literally feel like you're there with her. You know, every moment of hesitation, but also that voice, you know, that statement, you know, things that are said, we do not give up. I mean, you could fear it. You can feel it as, you know, you're reading about the tears falling down her cheeks. And, you know, hot tears falling down her cheeks. So there's so much in beauty in the way the book is written. But besides the beauty, there are key character messages in here for when you look at yourself in the mirror. What you'll learn from what Ella has written is you'll learn how to look at yourself and decide, who am I? Who am I looking at? And many of you have heard me say that in 1990, I woke up and I looked in the mirror and I was unrecognizable to myself. And I didn't know who I was. And that was a shocking point in my life. So let's give a copy of the book away. 1-800-930-2819. Bella, before we talk about faith and a few other things, again, please let folks know what the best way is for them to get a hold of you.
Yes, if you can go to my book website at https VellaMbena.com, you will find my social media links as well as Amazon.com link and places where you can book me and just learn more about me and the book.
Awesome. 1-800-930-2819. I'd love to give a copy of the book away. For one of you out there, Benny is masterful at that. Well, I got to tell you, Benny and I've been together 15 years. He's been my producer for 15 years. I'm working on the longest relationship I've ever had right here.
Oh, me too, actually.
Oh, Benny too.
Yeah,
oh,
me too.
Oh, there we go. Oh my God. So look, I got to talk about faith the way you talk about it in the book, because this has been for me, you know, my life, my journey, my mom committing suicide when I was 6, being homeless at 17. There's something I called upon at, you know, in my life that I couldn't describe. You know, some people call it an invisible energy. Some people call it a power greater than ourselves. You know, some people call it the universe. But when all is said and done, for me, it has been a faith in something that I believe, that I reference to as God today, that has never failed me, even when I feel like I have failed myself. But in the book, mm-hmm. This is such an important chapter in the book. And I got to read this if I could. And it's it says this. It says, my seeds of faith in God were planted in a wooden, rundown house that when I look at the only picture we have of it, it brings tears to my eyes. I was 2 years old when the picture was taken, the date inscribed in it, 1962. My mom is in the picture wearing raggedy clothes, picking up sticks from the yard on a cold winter day. I read that. And the minute I read it, I knew why you were writing about faith. But from your perspective, from that early age, what did that instill in you?
Wow. I forgot about that. I can see that picture. It instilled a sense of actually comfort. And like, what comfort me in looking at a picture is that my mom had faith. She sung songs. She told us stories about overcoming and believing in God. And, of course, I wanted to know where God was at an early age. Like, where is he? You know, can I touch him? And she would say, no, honey, you can't touch him. You just have to believe. And I like to question things. And I'm like, well, I don't want to believe in something that I can't see. And she said, you will feel it. Once you feel it, you'll get a little older. Once you feel it deep within, you'll know it's there. Once you see things happening that you cannot explain, then you know who God is. You will have found your faith. And I kind of went through life, you know, and I thought, oh, yeah. And then I would always remember that picture, because that picture now is a different picture. My mother, you know, she knew she was going to move out of that raggedy house. She knew her kids were going to have their own homes where they don't have to look down and see the ground, you know, while standing in the house. And she knew that, you know, that things were going to be better for her and my father, you know, and their kids. And the picture now is she, you know, she's the talk of the town. Still humble, but she's the talk of the town. But when I went out and things weren't so good for me and I didn't know what to do, who to turn to, and I remember, like, my mom's like, you know, when you can't turn to anyone, just pray, and that God that you want to touch, he will touch you. He will show you a miracle, and you will know faith. And faith, I knew I was going to prevail and get into the Foreign Service. I just didn't know when and how. And I recall about when I was about to be fired. Remember the ladies who saw someone being compassionate? I was on my knees. I was going through a divorce, my second divorce. I was away from home. You know, I was still in Georgia, but in another town. And when she told me she was going to fire me the next day, I'm like, God, you have to manifest yourself. You know, you got to take care of this. You know, you didn't take care of this second marriage, but you've got to take care of this. I cannot fail again, you know, unless I'll just have to kill myself. So I went home and I got some beer at the refrigerator. And I looked at it, and I'm like, no, something told me to put it back. So I put it back in my refrigerator. And so I went, because I was on a night shift, you know, so it was morning, you know, so I needed something. So I closed all the blinds, the curtains, the magnet, and my trailer, and I got on my knees. And I didn't know what to say. I'm like, whoever's out there, you eternal being, you know, we call God, whoever you are, please fix this. I didn't even know what to pray for, because I was that low. And I turned the light on and I lift one knee to get up. The phone rang. I put the knee back down because I was just too weak. You know, I said, let me talk kneeling down. And it was, the voice on the other end was a miracle. It was the State Department offering me the job in the Foreign Service after 2 years of applying for it. And I'm like, don't play with me. And she said, what do you mean? And I told her what I was doing at that moment. And she said, oh, my God, if you don't believe in God, then I don't know who you are. And I said, yes. And she said, faith. I said, yes, I have faith. I believed in that something was going to deliver me. I just didn't know how, when, where. And she said, well, you are delivered. So, you know, faith is big for me. So when I was overseas and and things were happening around me, and people were calling me names, and I'm like, I just smile. I got a song in my heart, and I would just, you know, sing it gently and just walk smiling, you know, madder than mad, or tears flowing inward. But I'm like, you know what? I'm going to get through this. And I did each time through to retirement. I'm retired. And I mean, people would tell me, oh, you know, what a big accomplishment. I'm like, I'm just retired, really. You know, they said, no. Retirement is just not that simple. And then from your type of career and being so close to death and all the issues you were telling us about, you had faith through this whole process. And I did, for sure.
Oh, you know, it is really, when we think about it, you know, we think about the hurdles we'll come over. And sometimes I think we go through, you know, foxhole prayers, right? We're in the foxhole, we start praying until something happens in our lives where we decide that there's more to it than waiting until we get in the foxhole. You know, we build, as you said previously in your book, you know, we learn about dreaming and dreaming big. We learn about taking risks. As you said, I won some, I lost some. But, you know, it is something that we start to build as part of our life DNA. You know, those things which we have come to know and acquire that enable us to walk every day through the obstacles and challenges with an understanding that, you know, somebody up there has got our back. Somebody's got our back.
Yes, indeed.
And you talk about this so beautifully, and you talk about it in a way where it's not just a one-time event, where it has now become a part of who you are, a part of your life. What would you say the greatest lesson is? And hold this for when we come back from break. What would you say your greatest spiritual lesson has been to date? Let's take a short break when we come back. Greatest spiritual lesson. Can't wait to hear that, everybody. Let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
Are you ready to stop stress, anxiety, and low self-esteem from running your life? Join award-winning author Dr. Friedemann Schaub for Empowerment Radio and learn breakthrough solutions to switch out of survival mode and approach every day with great ease, joy, and purpose. Tune in the first and third Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific to Empowerment Radio with host Dr. Friedemann Schaub on Transformation Talk Radio. Visit thefearandanxietysolution.com to learn more.
Have you ever wondered if there's a way to heal the deep, hidden inner issues, wounds, beliefs, and traumas? The Journey into Spiritual Healing engages people in all areas of their lives to heal themselves and others. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio as Dr. Jaffe brings conversations of healing of body, mind, and spirit as he merges the excellence of traditional medicine with the beauty of spiritual healing. For more information about Dr. Jaffe, this show, and his work, visit drjaffemd.com.
It's time to get your life back on Burn Bright Today with Jennifer Marcinelli. Tune in each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Learn to move from the darkness of burning out to the light of burning bright. Jennifer is redefining stress and the energetic causes of burnout, shining a light on process to get your life back. For more information about Jennifer and her work, visit BurnBrightToday.com.
Interested in deepening your spiritual practice? The School for Esoteric Studies offers online training to spiritual seekers from all paths of life and individual coaching. Our courses synthesize Eastern and Western spiritual traditions based on meditation, study, and service applied to everyday life. To learn more about our courses and services, please visit www.esotericstudies.net.
Do you want the knowledge and wisdom to understand where spirituality, science, and psychology intersect? Then join the Karmic Path Radio Show with Tina and Laura on TransformationTalkRadio.com Thursdays at 4 p.m. Pacific, Follow this charmingly, disarmingly dynamic duo as they explore how psychic ability, spirituality, and karmic law tie together. For more information on Tina, Laura, and their groundbreaking work, visit thekarmicpath.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Welcome back. Listen, muddy roads, blue skies. My journey to the foreign surface from the rural South to Tanzania and beyond. Bella, one more time. How can people find out more about you, especially if they're looking for somebody to come out and speak? How do they get a copy of the book, all of the above?
Yes, you can visit my website at https://. BellaMbena.com. And
awesome.
On the website, you will find a link to Amazon.com as well as my social media site.
Well, look, I'll tell you what. This girl from the Bronx, New York, was blessed to have a stepmom from the Deep South. You know, other than making the most delicious cornbread, greens, chitlins, beyond all of that yummy, you know, black-eyed peas, beyond all of that yummy, yummy stuff, I learned some stuff from this woman. And there's just something about that I just can't talk about enough. But I want to ask you this. I'm reading your book. And I got to tell you, every story you share, every step of the way, it's really an incident in your life that has so many dimensions, both the pain, the agony, the perseverance, the resilience, the faith, all of the above. But I want to ask you this question. I want to know, like, from all of this and where you are today, what would you say has been the most powerful spiritual lesson you learned?
Wow, Dr. Pat, I would probably say me accepting that I can't change things alone, letting go and letting God.
Mm-hmm.
Once I learned that, things started changing, or maybe it didn't change. Maybe they didn't change. I just accepted it. Maybe I saw it a little differently, but I was a fixer. Things had to be fixed then. And I messed up a lot. And one of it was with my son's life, so to speak. I needed him to be well-versed. You know, he was already global, you know, because, you know, he traveled with me since 3 years old. But I wanted the best for him. So I sent him off to boarding school. Even though he was in a great school in Tanzania, I sent him off there, and I made sure he had everything he needed. And then things started going wrong because I was not there. Not that I, you know, have anything against boarding school, but things started going bad, and I started fixing it. I'm the fixer, you know, pouring money out, you know, flying back, talking to teachers, you know. And, I mean, it just made matters worse. And I'm like, God, this is my child. You gave me this child. You know, I'm trying to fix this. You know, it seemed like it worked for other people. Why is it not working for me? And I saw something in a paper once, you know, in a spiritual paper, you know, catalog. I'm not a catalog, a magazine. Like, you got to let go and let God. Let him do it. And I did. I'm like, you know, God, he's yours. One night in a dark closet, I was praying my eyes out, like, God, what's wrong with this boy? Why isn't he, you know, cooperating with me? Why is he going down this dark path? And I'm like, he's yours. I couldn't even talk to God anymore. I just threw my hands up and say, God, he's yours. I just let go. And things started looking up brighter. And I do that with a lot of other things. You know, I mean, I'll do what I think I can do. But other than that, I don't worry myself too much over, because I'll run myself crazy. You know, I tell my son, but, you know, that my white hair, my gray hair is because of him, you know, but even though it's beautiful, But I just don't worry about it anymore. I just let God take care of my issues. You know, I'll state my case and then that's it. And things work out, believe it or not. They do.
Yeah, they do. Mm-hmm. They really do. And, you know, part of what my sense is, and for those people that, you know, are tuning in that are going to read the book, you know, there is a thread throughout the book of that goes beyond the many, many attributes you talk about, whether it's finding the true sense and identity, family, friends, perseverance, forgiveness. There is all of that. But there's one thing that also stands out, and that is gratitude. And I think that, you know, as I'm reading this, and I know we've got a couple of minutes left, I can't say enough about how grateful I am for my life. And some days it's harder to get up and get out of bed, but other days it's not as hard. But in the end, there's so much to reflect on. How important is gratitude to you?
Oh, it means everything to me. It gets me over the bad stuff. You know, thankfulness. I mean, I was in a house where, we put newspaper in the walls to keep the cold out. We had an outhouse. You know, we were told we couldn't go to college by our school counselor because we were poor. I mean, literally, you know, and I mean, I was spit in the face. I was dragged through the mud. These are literal stuff. I'm not figuratively. And I smiled and I said, thank God. Thank God I have hands I can wipe spit off of my face. I have legs I can get up out of the mud and go to a hotel and wash off. Thank God my son, even though he went astray for a while, he could have been dead. Thank God for everything. I'm a thankful person. You know, and my husband is the same way. You know, he's got just thanking me. He's like, thank you, sweetheart, thank you, thank you. I'm like, stop telling me thank you. Isabella, I'm, you know, he's Catholic. He's like, I thank God for everything. And I'm like, wow. And that was good. And I'm like, okay, good, that's how I am. But I just don't say it that much. So now we're a couple of thank yous. People are like, you don't have to say thank you. You're my brother-in-law. You're my sister. But I'm like, thank you. Yes, gratefulness, that's one of my most favorite chapters in the book because it just gets me beyond the hurt, the pain, when I reflect on things that I have and I should be grateful for.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I can't thank you enough for not only telling a very powerful story, but for reminding us how that truly powerful we can be and what really the makeup of that is. One last question. What's your personal message? What would you like to leave us with today?
My personal message is when you see someone dreaming or saying they want to become, and it doesn't have to be a young person, believe in them. Believe in them because dreams, visions do come true. That's what I'd like to leave.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so very, very much.
thank you
for all that you do.
Okay. Wonderful. Wow. I appreciate it.
Well, we're going to take a short break, everyone. We got another hour coming up on Transformation Talk Radio. We'll see you then.
The preceding audio was via a Skype call.